Chapter 11. Confident and absolute master of all his designs. Now the plot had its desired effect, for he pusheth the king upon all manner of precipitations. And if even the Abragratzians themselves who were about the king, interposeth for more temperate proceedings, he would call them cowards, strangers, ignorant of the temper of the Lunarians, who when they were a-going, might be driven, but if they were suffered to cool and consider, would face about and fall off. Indeed the men of prudence and estates among his own party, I mean the Abragratzians in the country, frequently warned him to take more moderate measures, and to proceed with more caution, told him he would certainly ruin them all, and himself, and that there must be somebody about his majesty, that pusheth him upon these extremes, on purpose to set all the nation in a flame, and to overthrow all the good designs, which with temper and good conduct, might be brought to perfection. Had these wary counsels been observed, and a prudence and policy agreeable to the mighty consequence of things been practiced, the Salianarian church had run a great risk of being overthrown, and to have sunk gradually in the Abrogian errors, the people began to be drawn off gradually, and the familiarity of the thing made it appear less frightful to unthinking people, who had entertained strange notions of the monstrous things that were to be seen in it, so that common vogue had filled the people's minds with ignorant aversions. That 'tis no absurdity to say, I believe there was 200,000 people who would have spent the last drop of their blood against Abragratzianism, that did not know whether it was a man or a horse. This thing considered well, would of itself have been sufficient to have made the prince and his friends wary, and to have taught them to suit their measures to the nature and circumstances of things before them. But success in their beginnings blinded their eyes, and they fell into this church snare with the most unpitied willingness that could be imagined. The first thing therefore this new counselor put his master upon, in order to the beginning his more certain ruin, was to introduce several of his Abragratzians into places of all kinds, both in the army, navy, treasure, and civil affairs, though contrary to some of the general constitutions of government. He had done it into the army before, though it had disgusted several of his military men, but now he pushed them upon making it universal, and still the passive Salianarians bore it with patience. From this tameness and submission, his next step was to argue that he might depend upon that the Salianarian church had so sincerely embraced the doctrine of non-resistance, that they were now ripened, not only to sit still, and see their brethren the Crolians suppressed, but to stand still, and be oppressed themselves, and he might assure himself the matter was now ripe, he might do just what he would himself with them, they were prepared to bear anything. This was the fatal stroke, for having possessed the prince with the belief of this, he let loose the reins to all his long-concealed desires. Down went their laws, their liberties, their corporations, their churches, their colleges, all went to wreck, and the eager Abragratzians thought the day their own. The Salianarians made no opposition, but what was contained within the narrow circumference of petitions, addresses, prayers, and tears, and these the prince was prepared to reject, and upon all occasions, to let them know he was resolved to be obeyed. Thus he drove on by the treacherous advice of his new counsels, till he ripened all the nation for the general defection which afterward followed. For as the encroachments of the prince pushed especially at their church liberties, and threatened the overthrow of all their ecclesiastical privileges, the clergy no sooner began to feel that they were like to be the first sacrifice, but they immediately threw off the visor, and beat the conchinazimer. This is a certain ecclesiastic engine which is usual in cases of general alarm, as the church's signal of universal tumult. This is truly a strange engine, and when a clergyman gets into the inside of it, and beats it, it roars, and makes such a terrible noise from the several cavities, that 'tis heard a long way. and there are always a competent number of them placked in all parts so conveniently that the alarm is heard all over the kingdom in one day. I had some thoughts to have given the reader a diagram of this piece of art, but as I am but a bad draftsman, I have not yet been able so exactly to describe it as that a scheme can be drawn, but to the best of my skill, take it as follows. 'Tis a hollow vessel, large enough to hold the biggest clergyman in the nation. It is generally an octagon in figure, open before, from the waist upward, but hole at the back, with a flat extended over it for reverberation, or doubling the sound. Doubling and redoubling, being frequently thought necessary to be made use of on these occasions. 'Tis very mathematically contrived, erected on a pedestal of wood like a windmill, and has a pair of winding stairs up to it, like those at the Great Tun at Heidelberg. I could make some hieroglyphical discourses upon it, from these references, thus. 1. That as it is erected on a pedestal like a windmill, so it is no new thing for the clergy, who are the only persons permitted to make use of it, to make it turn round with the wind, and serve to all the points of the compass. 2. As the flat over it assists to increase the sound, by forming a kind of hollow, or cavity proper to that purpose, so there is a certain natural hollowness, or emptiness, made use of sometimes in it, by the gentleman of the gown, which serves exceedingly to the propagation of all sorts of clamor, noise, railing, and disturbance. 3. As the stairs to it go winding up like those by which one mounts to the vast tun of wine at Heidelberg, which has no equal in our world, so the use made of these ascending steps is not altogether different, being frequently employed to raise people up to all sorts of enthusiasms, spiritual intoxications, mad and extravagant action, high exalted flights, precipitations, and all kinds of ecclesiastic drunkenness and excesses. The sound of this emblem of emptiness, the conchinazimer, was no sooner heard over the nation, but all the people discovered their readiness to join in with the summons, and as the thing had been concerted before, they sent over their messengers to demand assistance from a powerful prince beyond the sea, one of their own religion, and who was allied by marriage to the crown. They made their story out so plain, and their king had by the contrivance of their Achitophel rendered himself so suspected to all his neighbors, that this prince, without any hesitation, resolved to join with them, and accordingly makes vast preparations to invade their king. During this interval their behavior was quite altered at home, the doctrine of absolute submission and non-resistance was heard no more among them, the conchinazimer beat daily to tell all the people they should stand up to defend the rights of the church, and that it was time to look about them for the Abergrazians were upon them. The eager clergy made this ecclesiastic engine sound as loud, and make all the noise they could, and no men in the nation were so forward as they to acknowledge that it was a state trick, and they were drawn in to make such a stir about the pretended doctrines of absolute submission, that they did not see the snare which lay under it, that now their eyes were opened, and they had learned to see the power and superiority of natural right, and would be deceived no longer. Others were so honest to tell the truth, that they knew the emptiness and weakness of the pretense all along, and knew what they did when they pricked it up, viz. To suppress and pull down the Crolians. But they thought their prince, who they always served in crying up that doctrine, and whose exclusion was prevented by it, would have had more gratitude, or at least more sense, than to try the experiment upon them, since whatever to serve his designs and their own, which they always thought well united, they were willing to pretend, he could not, but see they always knew better than to suffer the practice of it in their own case. That since he had turned the tables upon them, 'tis true he had them at an advantage, and might pretend they were knaves, and perhaps had an opportunity to call them so with some reason, but they were resolved, since he had drove them to the necessity of being one or t'other, though he might call them knaves, they would take care he should have no reason to call them fools too. Thus the vapor of absolute subjection was lost on a sudden, and as if it had been preparatory to what was coming after, the experiment was quickly made. For the king pursuing his encroachments upon the church, and being possessed with a belief that pursuant to their open professions they would submit to anything, he made a beginning with them, in sending his positive command to one of his superintendent priests, or patriarchs, to forbid a certain ecclesiastic to officiate any more till his royal pleasure was known. Now it happened very unluckily that this patriarch, though none of the most learned of his fraternity, yet had always been a mighty zealous promoter of this blind doctrine of non-resistance, and had not a little triumphed over, and insulted the Crowleian dissenters upon the notion of rebellion, anti-monarchical principles and obedience, with a reserve for the laws, and the like, as a scandalous practice, and comprehensive of faction, sedition, dangerous to the church and state, and the like. This reverend father was singled out as the first mark of the king's design. The deluded prince believed he could not but comply, having so publicly professed his being all submission and absolute subjection. But as this was all conceit, he was pushed on to make the assault, where he was most certain to meet a repulse. And this gentleman had long since thrown off the mask, so his first order was disobeyed. The patriarch pretended to make humble remonstrances, and to offer his reasons why he could not in conscience, as he called it, comply. The king, who was now made but a mere engine, or machine, screwed up or down by this false counselor, to act his approaching destruction with his own hand, was prompted to resent this repulse with the utmost indignation, to reject all manner of submissions, excuses, or arguments, or anything but an immediate, absolute compliance, according to the doctrine so often inculcated. And this he run on so high, as to put the patriarch in prison for contumacy. The patriarch as absolutely refused to submit, and offered himself to the decision of the law. Now it was always a sacred rule in these lunar countries, that both king and people are bound to stand by the arbitrimnet of the law in all cases of right or claim, whether public or private, and this has been the reason that all the princes have endeavored to cover their actions with pretenses of law, whatever really has been in their design. For this reason the king could not refuse to bring the patriarch to a trial, where the humor of the people first discovered itself, for here passive obedience was tried and cast, the law proved to be superior to the king, the patriarch was acquitted, his disobedience to the king justified, and the king's command proved unjust. The applause of the patriarch, the acclamations of the people, and the general rejoicings of the whole nation at this transaction, gave a black prospect to the Abrograzians, and a great many of them came very honestly and humbly to the king and told him, if he continued to go on by these measures he would ruin them all. They told him what general alarm had been over the whole nation by the clamors of the clergy, and the beating of the conscienazimer in all parts, informed him how the doctrine of absolute obedience was ridiculed in all places, and how the clergy began to preach it back again like a witch's prayer, and that it would infallibly raise the devil of rebellion in all the nation. They besought him to content himself with the liberty of their religion, and the freedom they enjoyed of being led into places and offices of trust and honor, and to wait all reasonable occasions to increase their advantages, and gradually to gain ground. They entreated him to consider the impossibility of reducing so mighty, so obstinate, and so resolute a nation all at once. They pleaded how rational a thing it was to expect that by degrees and good management, which by precipitate measures would be endangered and overthrown. At these woesome counsels taken place in the king's mind, he had been king to his last hour, and the Salianarians and Crolians too had been all undone, for he had certainly encroached upon them gradually, and brought that to pass in time which by precipitant measures he was not likely to effect. It was therefore a masterpiece of policy in the Salianarian churchmen, to place a feigned convert near their prince, who should always bias him with contrary advices, puff him up with vast prospect of success, prompt him to all extremes, and always fool him with the certainty of bringing things to pass his own way. These arts made him set light by the repulse he met with in the matter of the patriarch, and now he proceeds to make two attacks more upon the church. One was by putting some of his Abrograzian priests into a college among some of the Salianarian clergy, and the other was to oblige all the Salianarian clergy to read a certain act of his council, in which his majesty admitted all the Abrograzians, Crolians, and all sorts of dissenters to a freedom of their religious exercises, sacrifices, exorcisms, dippings, preachings, and see and to prohibit the Salianarians to molest or disturb them. Now as this last was a bitter reproach to the Salianarian church for all the ill treatment the dissenting Crolians had received from them, and as it was expressed in the act that all such treatment was unjust and unchristian, so for them to read it in their temples was to acknowledge that they had been guilty of most unjust and irreligious dealings to the Crolians, and that their prince had taken care to do them justice. The matter of introducing the Abrograzians into the colleges or seminaries of the Salianarian priests was actually against the sacred constitutions and foundation laws of those seminaries. Wherefore in both these articles they not only disobeyed their prince, but they opposed him with those trifling things called laws, which they had before declared had no defensive force against their prince. These they had recourse to now, insisted upon the justice and right devolved upon them by the laws, and absolutely refused their compliance with his commands. The prince, pushed upon the tenters before, received their denial with exceeding resentment, and was heard with deep regret to break out in exclamations at their unexpected faithless proceedings, and sometimes to express himself thus: "Horrid hypocrisy! Surprising treachery! Is this the absolute subjection which in such numerous testimonials or addresses you professed, and for which you so often and so constantly branded the poor Crolians, and told me that your church was wholly made up of principles of loyalty and obedience? But I'll be fully satisfied for this treatment." In the minute of one of those excursions of his passion, came into his presence the seemingly revolted Linarian nobleman, and falling in with his present passions, prompts him to a speedy revenge, and proposes his erecting a court of searches, something like the Spanish Inquisition, giving them plenipotentiary authority to hear and determine all ecclesiastical causes absolutely and without appeal. He empowered these judges to place by his absolute will all the Abrograzian students in the Salianarian college, and though they might make a formal hearing for the sake of the form, yet that by force it should be done. He gave them power to displace all those Salianarian clergymen that had refused to read his act of demiscience to the Abrograzian and Crolian dissenters, and 'twas thought he designed to keep their revenues in petto, till he might in time fill them up to some of his own religion. The commission accordingly began to act, and discovering a full resolution to fulfill his command, they by force proceeded with the students of the Salianarian college, and it was very remarkable that even some of the Salianarian patriarchs were of this number, who turned out their brethren the Salianarian students, to place Abrograzians in their room. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.